Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
God gave me a Ferrari because I am a Ferrari. You're a Ferrari too.
When God made you, he had all the options put on. You are fully loaded and totally equipped.
So do this with me.
Where did we ever come up with the style of preaching we have today? There is some entertaining preaching, but not convicting preaching, and the legacy has been tragic.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Here we go. This is Wretched Radio, bringing you the latest in celebrity news, entertainment, gossip. Maybe slapping a Bible verse on it, maybe not. But because we're a Christian station, we'll say that we're giving the Christian perspective. Or do they? Harry and Meghan, commanding the attention of the American public, perhaps yours also. We would like to actually filter this story through the Bible. That's right. That is what a Christian is called upon to do. Not just pick the low-hanging fruit. That stuff is pretty obvious. Every secular program and article you're reading, they're mocking it. Oh, the poor babies. Oh, look at them on their estate. He actually has to go do royal service with his servants. Okay, that's there. That's pretty obvious stuff. But how does a Christian respond to the interview of Harry and Meghan? Let this perhaps cause us to be convicted if necessary and to grow in an area if necessary. How did you take in the news of Harry and Meghan? Let's get convicted together, shall we? And I'll confess my guilt, because the knee-jerk response to it was based on your attitude toward Harry and Meghan, Oprah Winfrey, the royalty, how you think about Great Britain, if you like their food, you're not a fan of tea, all of those things come to bear, and you render some sort of a verdict. Here's my opinion. Here's my take on the subject. The Christian is commanded to filter even tripe, like the Oprah Winfrey interview of Harry and Meghan. I'm sorry. It just says so much about our culture that's the big story du jour. That's the biggie, man. What these people are struggling with in their world. In the meantime, there are children in cancer wards around the country, and their families are struggling to pay the bills. They're heartbroken and grieving. And most people in our culture are consumed with the plight of Harry and Meghan. But that isn't what we want to talk about. We want to filter the story through the Bible. So here's the convicting question for you and for me. When you were watching whatever level or amount it was of Harry and Meghan, can you think of one Bible verse that came to mind? One. I have to confess to you, it wasn't the first thing that came to mind. Why? Because I bring so much to bear to a story, and so do you. All of those attitudes about Great Britain, the royals, what you think about the Crown TV show, what your attitude is toward the whole system versus what we've got going on in America, you bring all of that to bear. The Christian needs to try to set all of that aside and ask the question, what does my Bible say about Harry and Meghan? Did one verse come to mind? If you are feeling convicted by that question, okay, wasn't my intention just to make you feel bad. Let us do better. Let us not go for the low-hanging fruit of our culture, making fun of them, deriding them, weighing in. She said that, but then she said, and then 2 minutes later, and then he said, and then. How's about running through the question, what does God say about this shebang? The Oprah Winfrey interview of Harry and Meghan. Here's a Bible verse that I don't think crossed the mind of anybody in this country before airing the Oprah special or after. Proverbs 18:17. Permit me to paraphrase it for you. You hear somebody's side of the story and it sounds good, but then you hear the other side of the story and, all of a sudden stuff isn't so clear. What is the lesson in that proverb? Well, there's many. But we need to be careful that when we just hear one side of the story, we don't render a verdict. We hear both sides of the story. Then we consider both claims, not one. Do you think any of the producers, including Oprah herself, ever stop to go, you know, hey, gang, we got a problem here. Proverbs 18:17 says that it's not good for people to just get one side of the story without hearing the other side, because they're going to render a verdict based on somebody's clearly biased opinion, favoring themselves. Do you really think that we should move forward with this? Of course not. Christian, did you and I consider that? Did you and I think through, wait, what does the palace have to say about this? Do they have a defense of this? Now, maybe they reached out to them. I'll confess to you, I watched 20 seconds of the thing and I only picked it up on news clips. Nevertheless, did they call out to the queen to ask for a comment on any of this stuff? And even if the palace declined, do you think that caused them to go, oh, gang, I don't know if we can go through with this. I don't know, man. Do you think this is wise? Not a chance. And yet, you and I have a choice about receiving it. Is it even wise for me to consume this side of the story, knowing I'll never get the other side of the story? But perhaps the bigger question is, did I filter this scene through the Bible? Question number two. How many people in America, and I will ask you, including yourself, were really grieved about the damage that was done to a family? Oh, I know. There goes a billionaires or whatever strata they happen to be in. Yeah, I know. They get weighted on hand and foot. I get that. It's a family. It's human beings. It was royally trashed by Harry and Meghan. We saw two disgruntled children lashing out against parents and grandparents. And that is a song that is sung all over Western civilization that is so undermining for Christian families that we don't honor our father and mother. If any sin was being committed by Harry and Meghan, it was that. Were they honoring their father and mother when they were talking about them? One-sidedly, I don't care if it was true or false, irrelevant. Were they honoring father and mother? When I was watching it, was I thinking, wow, are they trashing a commandment? Whoa, God is not going to bless them because there is blessing in honoring parents. That was a devastating blow to the family. And mom and dad, that is one that you need to be aware of because your kids are getting that message. It's okay to go on national TV, the highest rated program in the country, to trash those idiot parents. And you're warring against that. You need to know that. I'm going to be speaking in Nashville and in Austin, Texas at the Teach Them Diligently conference. And I'm going to be discussing teenagers and their attitude toward kids. And I'm thinking about almost sounding hysterical. You, mom and dad, you better get serious about this. The world is not playing with your kids. They are encouraging your kids to despise you, to reject your wisdom, to mock you, make fun of you, talk behind your back, or on national television, which is exactly what we saw. Church, we got to get serious about this. You talk to most parents that are good Christian parents, not perfect, good Christian parents, what they're going through with their kids. Why? Why does that have to be? Why do the teenage years have to be so tumultuous? Well, I can tell you one of the reasons, it's because of Harry and Meghan and the world that puts up with that. Did you hear any commentaries from anybody saying that was disgraceful what they did? That they were slandering people, which was another crime that was being committed on that program. They were only showing one side. They were not honoring father and mother. And they were slandering people. They were saying nasty things. For what end? Oh, yeah, money. That was tragedy number three. Tragedy number four, similar. They were selling their family for gain. They trashed loved ones while insisting on their own moral superiority. They were just shocked at how terrible those people behaved, as they go about behaving terribly to make money. Wow. There was another insight that I think happened after the fact, courtesy of one Piers Morgan. That's right, Piers Morgan, who went on his morning talk show in Great Britain, and he said the stuff that is pretty obvious for secularists. Well, she lied about this. I don't believe her any more than I believe anybody. She could read the weather report, and I think she's lying. He got fired. The Office of Communications said that was a violation of what? There is no freedom of speech. They censor it because it was considered hate speech. It made somebody feel bad. So check this out. Meghan Markle, who goes on and trashes a bunch of people and gets praised. Piers Morgan does the exact same thing. He criticized somebody's behavior and he gets trashed. What's the difference? That would be our new woke world. And Christian, if this doesn't get resolved soon and freedom of speech doesn't reign, you're going to be Piers Morgan too. Biblical lessons. Thank you, Meghan and Harry. This is Wretched Radio. Yes, you're busy, but I suspect you could spare 2 minutes if it saved you $500 a month. Please call MediShare for 120 seconds. They will give you a quote on affordable biblical health sharing, an alternative to health insurance. You get free telehealth services, a huge network of doctors, customer support, people praying for you, and 400,000 members sharing one another's health burdens. That is what MediShare is about. And on average, you will save, whether you are a single or a family, $500 per month. It will take you 2 minutes to make a phone call and find out how you could be saving and have peace of mind. Got 2 minutes? Call 844-34-BIBLE. 844-34-BIBLE.
Hey, thank you so much for being here at Wretched Radio today. We certainly appreciate each and every one of you who take time to tune in and listen on a daily basis. And we also appreciate each and every one of you who are gospel partners. You can partner with Wretched right now to save the lost. As a matter of fact, the more you give, the more we're always able to give away. Wretched relies on the kindness and generosity of God's people, just like you. We're members in good standing of the ECFA. In other words, we can't waste your money, even if we wanted to, which we don't and never would. Get all the information right now on becoming a gospel partner at wretched.org/donate. Your faithful and consistent support will help Wretched reach millions of people all around the world. 83% of every dollar you give goes directly to ministry. You can give either at wretched.org/donate, or you can text the word Wretched to 44321. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
So, you're one of them there Christians that wants a lot of bang for your giving buck. I concur completely, and that is why I would like to commend to you the Masters Academy International. If you would like to see your giving go a long way, the Masters Academy is the vehicle that will make sure your dollar goes very, very far. They train indigenous pastors in 16 countries around the globe to rightly pastor and to rightly preach the Word of God for years, for decades. Consider the fruit that will be born from training a pastor to rightly divide the Word of truth. If you would like to get a lot of bang for your giving buck, please learn more about the Masters Academy International. Pick a country that's near and dear to your heart and give with confidence. Wretched.org/pastor.
Books of the Bible. 1 Corinthians is a letter from the Apostle Paul to the church in Corinth. Paul addresses his concerns about divisions and immorality in the church. Then Paul answers questions from the Corinthians about marriage, food, worship, gifts, and the resurrection. When you want to understand God's high calling for the church, look to 1 Corinthians. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
And the celebrity news just keeps breaking. Please stop it. This is Wretched Radio. Celebrity making the news. It's been a while. 40, 50, 60 years since we've heard much about Pepe Le Pew.
Darling, I have waited for you. I remove them from you, the bonds of slavery. Viola! Just to think, radiant flower, you do not have to come with me to the...
Okay, I gotta confess to you, I am not a fan of cataphatic prayer. If you're not familiar with this unbiblical exercise, I think we stole the idea probably from Sigmund Freud, maybe Carl Jung. When you go back into your past and you remember all of the things that happened to you, whether they happened to you or not, because those are really the source of your problems today. You were hurt in the past, so go and revisit it. Please note, if you've been hurt in the past, I'm not being snarky about that. I am, however, being snarky about the idea that we can go back through dreams or through somehow getting ourselves into a meditative state or even hypnosis, that we can then recall cruelties that were inflicted upon us so that we can deal with them today. We adopted that in some evangelical circles as cataphatic prayer. The idea is through prayer and meditation, you go back in time with Jesus, who holds your hand and walks you through your childhood to point out to you the things that were done to you and to cry with you and to mourn with you that those things happened to you. And then presumably that's going to help you to heal. It's unbiblical. Having said that, wow, did I just flash back to my childhood when I was listening to Pepe Le Pew.
We are already here.
Did anybody like Pepe Le Pew? Anybody?
Sure.
Really?
I don't know.
You just wrecked my whole premise here. These days, Pepe Le Pew is back in the news because he, you maybe didn't know this, was a rapist, or at least contributed to rape culture. This is, of course, a part of the movement of now we are trying to understand how horribly, well, everything we have been in the Western civilization that we used to love. These things that were pretty standard fare, the way that we talked, the way that we even believed, they were all bad, they were all racist, they were all sexist, they were all terrible, including Pepe Le Pew. An individual writing for the New York Times, he's a columnist, he texted out, some of the first cartoons I can remember included Pepe Le Pew, who normalized rape culture. Words have meanings. Pepe Le Pew, apparently, it even looks like single-handedly, normalized rape culture. I didn't like Pepe Le Pew because I didn't like him. I didn't find him funny. He was kind of hard to understand with his French accent. I didn't like the premise of it. And I didn't like the way that he treated the kitty cat that he was constantly after. It was clear she didn't like him. So just leave her alone. It never dawned on me that I was being given permission to rape women. And yet, that is the current conclusion, at least of one New York Times columnist. In defense of himself, after he received a little bit of backlash, said, let's see, one, he grabs, kisses a girl, a stranger, repeatedly, without consent and against her will. That's correct. He did. Number two, she struggles mightily to get away from him, but he won't release her. That's true. I'm looking at the cartoon right now, and you're hearing it.
And so, mon chéri, we can do away with the dull preliminaries.
All right. He is holding her against her will. Did any kid think that means I can go out and actually violate a woman? Well, apparently, according to this fellow. Three, he locks a door to prevent her from escaping. This helped the boys that understand that no didn't really mean no, that it was a part of the game and starting the line of a power struggle. It taught overcoming a woman's strenuous, even physical objections was normal, adorable, and funny. They didn't even give the woman the ability to speak. Therefore, Pepe Le Pew apparently single-handedly normalized rape culture. Now, Let's try to figure this out for just a second to see if we can really understand how it is somebody could interpret what I deem to be a very unfunny cartoon anyway, to be an official endorsement of rape culture. Presuppositions. Pre-understandings. A hermeneutic of the world and how reality works. This is a lesson that you and I can learn from the now shaming and canceling of Pepe Le Pew. Because if you looked at the facts like this, he tries to kiss her, she doesn't want it, he even locks the door, she doesn't get to speak. Well, you would say, that's rape. Well, except for the fact that it's not rape, he's kissing her. That's a difference. He's kissing her against her will, not doing more than that. Furthermore, he's a cartoon. He was the bad guy. Let's remember that too. I don't think that the creators, if this current New York Times columnist author is correct, Pepe Le Pew was on for about, he was only in different cartoons. He was never a cartoon of his own, I don't believe. And so he made, I think, about 17 appearances over the course of about 17. So once a year, Pepe Le Pew would have a short injected, about 3.5 minutes long, injected into another cartoon. I don't think anybody at the time was saying, hey, he's endorsing rape with his behavior, or that he was actually trying to violate her in that way. But if that is so, then the creators of Pepe Le Pew, they were trying to teach that to children subliminally? Yikes. That's an accusation. He was a bad guy. He was not set up to be somebody who was admired. I never admired the cat. I grant you, I just wasn't he was a skunk. I wasn't a fan anyway. But I never was thinking, yeah. Mom, I'm going to the playground because there's some 6-year-old girls there that I want to treat the way Pepe Le Pew does. Did any dad ever use Pepe Le Pew to go, see, son, that's how you're supposed to treat the goyles? If anything, a good Christian dad would say, wow, he is not treating her lovingly, is he? He is not treating her with a great deal of respect, is he? He isn't honoring her wishes. But endorsing and promoting and teaching rape, it's a cartoon, which means it's supposed to be funny. And a joke is typically not reality. It's always a twist on reality, whether it's slight and observational humor or it's Jerry Lewis French comedy, extraordinarily exaggerated. It's not reality. It's a cartoon. Why did this fellow bring this interpretation to Pepe Le Pew? Because he brought that interpretation to Pepe Le Pew because that's what he was looking for. Because that is his filter for the world. His framework is everything is oppressor and oppressed. And anybody who appears to do anything that looks like that, ironically, needs to be canceled, which to me sounds an awful lot like oppression. Nevertheless, he brings that package to bear. The Christian needs to be very careful what we bring to bear on a particular story. Because we do bring something to bear and we leave something behind. Whenever we need to figure out whether it is Pepe Le Pew, pot smoking, the role of women, going to war, all of our current cultural issues, I lose my pre-understandings. I lose them. Whatever I think about Pepe Le Pew. Does anybody like skunks, by the way? Was anybody supposed to like this character? At any rate, whatever I think about skunks, whatever I think about cats, whatever I think about cartoons, I set it aside. Whatever I think about marijuana, whatever I think about war, my personal feelings and my framework that I bring to it. And believe me, we bring a position to these issues, which in my opinion is why we are seeing some necessary and some unnecessary division in evangelical culture regarding social justice. We bring an awful lot to the party. And some good people are coming up with some different conclusions. Now, some are coming up with such bad conclusions, it's truly problematic. But some of them, it's a difference of opinion. So how is it that some good theologians come to such different conclusions? We bring different pre-understandings, and we have got to lose those and do better than Mr. New York Times regarding Pepe Le Pew. But at the same time, as Christians, I do bring a filter that never shakes. It is my biblical filter. How do I run Pepe Le Pew through the Bible? How do I figure him out? How do I respond to social justice, going to war, smoking marijuana, getting a vaccination, putting on a mask? I never lose my thinking of every issue through the Bible, slowly, thoughtfully, prayerfully, step by step. And if I don't leave behind my pre-understandings, they are going to taint my understanding, and suddenly I'm going to make Pepe Le Pew a rapist. Bad character. Rapist. That can only be arrived at when I bring my worldview to bear without leaving it behind and only filtering it through the Bible. Easy? No. Demanded of us? Absolutely. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Hicks. Encouraging things are happening across Texas for unborn babies. This Tuesday, a 22nd city passed a pro-life ordinance declaring itself a sanctuary for the unborn and banning abortions. The Murchison City Council voted unanimously in favor of protecting unborn babies in their city. The ordinance recognizes that unborn babies are valuable human beings who deserve to be protected under the law. It prohibits abortions within city limits and prevents abortion businesses from opening there. The ordinance also penalizes abortion practitioners for aborting unborn babies, but it does not penalize women who seek to have abortions. Mark Lee Dickerson, director with the Right to Life of East Texas and leader of the Sanctuary for Unborn effort, praised Murchison leaders for addressing a, quote, barbaric practice that society has ignored for far too long. In the Murchison Ordinance, abortion is defined as, quote, the act of using or prescribing an instrument, a drug, a medicine, or any other substance, device, or means with the intent to cause the death of an unborn child of a woman known to be pregnant. According to the ordinance, an act is not an abortion if the act is done with the intent to save the life or preserve the health of an unborn child, remove a dead unborn child whose death was caused by accidental miscarriage, or remove an ectopic pregnancy. Abortion activists have tried to stop the effort of the Sanctuary for the Unborn, but in May, the American Civil Liberties Union dropped its lawsuit challenging seven of the city's ordinances. A French teacher was killed last year because one of his students reportedly lied about a teacher's anti-Muslim presentation. According to the story from The Blaze, history teacher Samuel Paty was beheaded after one man learned about the student's allegations when it viraled on the internet and caused anti-hate riots in France. The unnamed student, who was a schoolgirl, allegedly 13 years of age, has now confessed to the police that her accusations against her teacher was a lie. The story in The Blaze said the student told her father almost a year ago that Patty, during a lesson on free speech, presented in class the Prophet Muhammad as cartoons with his genitals exposed. The father then filed a legal complaint against Patty and launched a hate campaign against him online. The online campaign then reached Muslims, who retaliated against Patty with widespread anger that resulted to him being beheaded 10 days later and violent riots in France. Prosecutors found a direct causal link to the teacher's gruesome death and the online hate campaign launched against him. And the news story also said that the man who beheaded him was shot to death by police for attempting to flee the scene after he was tracked down. As we tell you all the time, continue to pray for our brothers and sisters abroad. More Wretched Radio is on the way. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 1675. German Lutheran minister Philipp Jakob Spener publishes Pia Desideria, which becomes a manifesto for pietism. While both Catholicism and Protestantism define the faith in largely communal and societal terms, pietism emphasized the personal experience of being born again. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Please! No more celebrity talk! This is Wretched Radio. Sorry! I am bound to bring you the latest celebrity news, entertainment, and information. And call it Christian, because We're going to play a song by Hillsong next. This is Wretched Radio. Hey, we have to talk about celebrity things because I dressed for the occasion. Jimmy, do you know who,
yes.
Do you know who gave me this tie that I'm wearing right now?
I do not know.
Oh, you will, because believe me, I'll remind you every single time I wear it.
Okay. Hi, this is Phyllis Diller. You're listening to Todd Friel, the only man in the world who wears makeup on radio.
Wait for it. It's my Phyllis Diller tie. So we're talking entertainment, baby, because I'm dressed for it. Jordan Peterson back in the news. He is one famous fellow, if you are not aware of this man, who is having a great deal of influence, mostly on young males. They seem to flock to this fellow, which tells us there really is a vacuum for male leadership. Isn't there, in fact? I'm not just the one who imagined that. Polls tell us that boys are looking for male leadership because there is a vacuum in their lives. They are looking for somebody to tell them what to do, how to act, because they're being told a lot that you as a man are supposed to basically reflect and resemble a woman. And they are not receiving any direction. So along comes a guy like Jordan Peterson, who gives advice like, get up in the morning, turn around and make your bed, comb your hair, and get to work. That's the type of advice he's giving. And the kids are listening to it as if they have never heard it before. That they are suddenly being given wisdom from on high that should have been given from dad a long time ago. And so it is Jordan Peterson, a secular psychologist from Toronto, has been very effective in reaching young people with a lot of good stuff. I grant you that. It tends to be commonsensical, but his biblical views are at best terrible, infused with Jungian psychology. He even lectures on the Bible. He certainly speaks about morality, and he's not shy about talking about Jesus Christ. He found himself having some sort of physical and mental and emotional breakdown recently. It sounded, the little bit that I read, it did not sound good. And now he's back, admitting at the launch of his latest book, he's not quite himself yet. And that's important because what you're about to hear from Jordan Peterson reveals a man who is pretty emotional. In this very podcast that he just launched, that you're about to hear, he even expresses that. His emotions, they're pretty close to the surface, so please keep that in mind. As we hear what some Christians are saying is a sure sign Jordan Peterson's getting saved. He's either saved or he's really, really close. Now, let's just be theologically precise for a moment. You are either saved or you're not. You're not getting close. You either are in the family of God or you're out. Nevertheless, I understand what people are getting after. It sounds like he has some interest in these things, and he talks about Jesus, and he gets very emotive. That doesn't mean that God is convicting him of sin, righteousness, and judgment. There could be a lot of reasons for this emotive discourse on Jesus Christ. Jordan Peterson, remember, is a secular psychologist, and you are about to hear that a lot as he talks about Jesus.
The difference between those mythological gods and Christ was that there's a representation of, there's a historical representation of his, of his existence as well. Now you can debate whether or not that's genuine.
No, you can't. Jesus Christ actually existed. He actually walked this earth. Secularists, they even agree, yes, there was a man who walked the planet. Now, whether he did those things or not, they of course disagree with that. But nobody disagrees with the fact that Jesus Christ was an actual human being who actually walked this earth.
You can debate about whether or not he actually lived and whether there's credible objective evidence for that. But
there is.
It doesn't matter in some sense because this, well, it does, but there's a sense in which it doesn't matter because there's still a historical story. And so what you...
Hold on. This is really important to understand. And this would help us to figure out how could we help Jordan Peterson. He's about to express the difference between actual and what appears to be factual. Meaning, even if Jesus Christ didn't walk this earth, what he said, presumably, seems to work for Jordan. I like the story. I like that he embodies the ideal man. Something, by the way, that secular philosophers love to muse about. The idea of what is the actual self? Who is the real you? That, by the way, is a Jungian exploration. But that aside for a moment, Jordan Peterson is now going to express the way that he's thinking. And I don't think he's alone in this. Even if Jesus Christ didn't exist, we know he did, but nevertheless, even if he didn't, the story is so good, I'm inclined to believe it. You're going to hear him say it. My question for you is, why is his thinking fallacious?
Having the figure of Christ is an actual person who actually lived, plus a myth. And in some sense, Christ is the union of those two things. The problem is I probably believe that.
He doesn't say which one exactly. He believes that Jesus, what he said, perhaps what he did, doesn't matter if it actually happened. I like it. And it's kind of what I'm in sync with. It's what I tend to think is maybe the right way for this planet to operate. What's wrong with his thinking?
But I don't know. Okay. I'm amazed at my own belief, and I don't understand it. Like, because I've seen sometimes the objective world and the narrative world touch. You know, that's Jungian synchronicity.
What is he talking about? We observe the world. We think this is the way that it ultimately ought to be. Ideally, it would look like this. Enter a narrative, whether it happened or not, and it's just, it catches it. That's it. It embodies it. And in this instance, it's Jesus Christ. Jordan Peterson thinks the world ought to operate a certain way. Morals and values ought to be written in a certain form. And Jesus Christ, whether he was real or not, doesn't seem to matter entirely. What matters is, it's working for me. What's wrong with Jordan's thinking? Question two, how would you seek to help him through this confusion?
And I've seen that many times in my own life. And so in some sense, I believe it's undeniable. You know, we have a narrative sense of the world. For me, that's been the world of morality. That's the world that tells us how to act.
There it is. So Jordan has a sense of how things should be. He likes it. He sees Jesus, at least the Jesus story, and he catches, yes, Jesus is the guy who's got it. And that's working for me. See the problem?
It's real. Like, we treat it like it's real. It's not the objective world. But the narrative and the objective world touch. And the ultimate example of that, in principle, is supposed to be Christ.
How would you help this man?
But I don't know what to, that seems to me oddly plausible.
Yeah.
But well, I still don't know what to make of it. It's too, partly because it's too terrifying a reality to fully believe. I don't.
Wow, that's fascinating to me. It seems he'd like to believe that it's real, not just working, it's real. But it scares him.
I don't even know what would happen to you if you fully believed it.
Mm-hmm.
If you believed in the story of Christ, or if you believe that history and let's say the narrative meet, let's
both.
Say.
I think you, because when you believe that, you buy both those stories. You believe that the narrative and the objective can actually touch.
Problem number one with Jordan's thinking: he's starting with a faulty premise. He thinks this is the way the world ought to be. Jordan can't know. Jordan has an opinion. This is Jordan's preference, and Jesus seems to be aligning with it to endorse what he has already believed. In other words, Jordan has things backwards. Jesus, God, must exist for there to be true right and wrong, good and evil. I'd like to help Jordan understand that. I'm not sure, however, he'd be able to get through his 1 Corinthians 1, 2, and 3 brain, which is a brain saturated in secular thinking, in humanistic philosophies, in high-minded ideologies that have so clouded the simplicity that is in Christ, he can't see him for who he truly is. And so I'd read 1 Corinthians 1, 2, and 3 and say, Jordan, I think you're being described here. Then how would I help Jordan? I think that I'd like to press on his conscience. The reality is, Jordan, those ideals that you think are so wonderful, you have failed. You have fallen short. And the reason that you are looking for some sort of ethereal narrative is because you have a sense of justice and you have fallen short. And you need this Jesus. And the great news is he did exist. And he will save you if you will set aside all of the highfalutin thinking, become like a child, repent, and put your trust in Jesus Christ. How would you help Jordan Peterson? This is Wretched Radio. You say Edith in Romania, they say Edith.
Burdened by the hopelessness surrounding her, Edith prayed for a way to bring the gospel to Çakale. Since she started in 2008, she has discipled more than 100 children in this small village, and countless lives have been changed.
If you have never been to Romania, permit me to draw the picture. Think poor, forsaken, dead town in the middle of nowhere. That is where the Tomorrow Clubs thrive. Kids clubs bringing the gospel to small villages. The kids get saved. The parents get saved. The church gets revitalized. And this is happening all over Eastern Europe, courtesy of the Tomorrow Clubs and you. $30 a month. 30 disciples. Would you please consider supporting your own Tomorrow Clubs? TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Millennials, well, they have their own language. T, on fleek, shook, woke, and the list goes on. And those words don't mean what you think they do. But that doesn't make them aliens, just hard to understand. And we desire to understand them. So what we did is find our very own millennial, John Fabares, and he set out on a road trip to truth to do just that, reach the millennial generation. Why? Well, because this generation is struggling. The third leading cause of death among millennials is suicide. They're depressed, they're anxious, and of course, they're lost. Road Trip to Truth was created so we can understand millennials and so you could understand just how to witness to them. So get your copy right now of Road Trip to Truth. RoadTripToTruth.org is where you can find it. RoadTripToTruth.org. It's on fleek.
Numbers. Who doesn't love numbers? Okay, I don't, and maybe you don't either, but you are going to be thrilled at these statistics from preborn.org. Since 2007, there have been over 500,000 pregnancy tests. Whoa. 42,000 women have professed faith in Jesus Christ, and over 123,000 babies' lives were saved. You can have a direct impact on the battle for life in a country that is increasingly opposed to life. While the government is busy trying to take the lives of more children, you and I can be saving babies and saving mommies, because Preborn, they provide free ultrasounds, and they also preach the gospel. Babies get saved, and so do mommies. Would you please help grow these numbers by supporting Preborn? You can do that at preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Titles of Christ. In the Bible, Jesus is given many titles that teach us about who he is and what he has done. Jesus is called the door. A door serves to provide or prevent access. Thieves and robbers are prevented from entering in, but those who trust in Christ are able to come through him into eternal salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Oh, I know what you're thinking, all right. This is Wretched Radio. Instead of playing this, we should be playing this.
The church is one foundation, is Jesus Christ the Lord.
Church news.
She is his new creation, by spirit and the word.
I would actually argue it should be the former and not the latter, even though the people that are going to be discussed here on Wretched Radio, yes, they are names associated with the church, but wow, they're even bigger celebrities. Perhaps not in the eyes of the world, but most certainly in evangelical Christianity, we have some superstars. Some good, some bad. Some that are persevering, some not so much. Have you taken any time to consider the celebrity culture lately? Because no doubt you've been rocked in some way, shape, or form by a celebrity who took a tumble. And there have been plenty of them lately, even some good guys. What? How did that happen? It's going to happen. And sometimes it will be contained right inside of a local church because the individual isn't a high-profile fellow or fellowette. And so we don't get to hear about it. But because of the evangelical celebrity culture, we do. And it causes a lot of people to be troubled by it. It causes people to perhaps doubt their faith. What do we do with a fallen celebrity who taught and I benefited from it? Was that false? All of those questions swirl up. And one question, frankly, that I think is worth questioning is the evangelical celebrity culture a good one at all? Is it even wise that we foster such a thing? And clearly, I think the answer to that is, I think it overall is a good thing that there are blessings of some people that are just really, they're powerful preachers, and we all get to be blessed by them. That is a good thing, and I don't think we want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. But I do think that we do need to be careful where we put our allegiances and perhaps be a little bit more discretionary when it comes to supporting them, especially financially. When we don't know much about them, there are dangers to that. And we've seen that lately, which brings us to one of the celebrities that has recently taken a fall, which would be Ravi Zacharias, of course. This will be very brief, so don't panic. Not more Ravi talk, just to update you on the situation. I don't know how this ministry is going to endure. I know that there are other people inside of the Ravi Zacharias Ministries ministry, other speakers. I don't know how long they'll stay there, frankly. And if they even still are, I would imagine some have vamoosed. But the ministry is going to change the name from RZIM, which is Ravi Zacharias International Ministries, to, well, we don't know what, but they're taking Ravi's name off of it. I don't know what you have left. We will see. It looks like the ministry is trying to figure that out. I think it is a very legitimate question. I don't think it needs to be asked snarkily or meanly. But should that ministry continue? Because we need to remember, and I recognize fully well the hurt and the pain that he has caused. It has been massive. Nevertheless, that ministry was responsible for him. And all of this happened right underneath their noses. Should they be continuing in ministry? Are they even qualified to do so? Celebrity number two, who's changing the name, Jeremiah Johnson became a celebrity, especially in charismatic circles. Why? Because he believed that as a child he had a very powerful gift of anointing. Quote, on his website, he had the privilege of walking in a strong prophetic anointing since he was a little boy, which failed him when he insisted over and over again that Donald Trump was going to win the election. He was verifiably wrong. Jeremiah, if you're listening, you made a classic prophetic mistake. You were too specific in your prophecy. Dude, if you're going to keep hoodwinking people, you've got to be general. I'd like to help you with that right now. Jimmy?
Yes.
I'm going to be making a prophecy about you.
Oh, well.
Jimmy, I'm just telling you, in the future, you are going to do some things that are going to be, oh, they're going to be something. And there's going to be some, I'm afraid, brother, you're going to be going through some hard times. And
oh, man.
You're going to be having struggles with some of your family members. So the Lord told me to tell you that.
Oh, man.
How can I lose?
You hit the nail on the head.
Well, of course I did. You're going to do some things. Yeah, you're going to struggle with your family. Of course you are, because who doesn't ever have issues with their family? It's so vague in general, you can get away with being a false prophet. It's what you can get away with. And yet this fellow made that classic error by saying specifically Donald Trump is going to win. He didn't. So what is a ministry to do when they have been outed? I find two things fascinating. Number one, they're changing their name. So instead of Jeremiah Johnson Ministries, and I keep seeing Robert Redford traipsing through the snow in my mind every time I say that, he's going to change the brand. The brand of the ministry to the Altar Global. Why? Did the man learn his lesson? No, God told him. So he's changing the direction at God's behest to the Altar Global to get away from one scandal and try to start up and continue to deceive people that he hears from the Lord. Clearly, he doesn't. And he shouldn't be followed by anyone if he continues to say that he does. Secondly, I found this really fascinating, and this is something that I think we all need to try as best we can without any Pew research on this or George Barna polling. He said that he received, when he said, look, I was wrong, I made a mistake, I shouldn't have done that, that he got hammered by people. He wrote this, I've received multiple death threats and thousands upon thousands of emails from Christians saying the nastiest and most vulgar things I have ever heard toward my family and ministry. Now, I suspect that probably came from folks that are in on his side with a charismatic bent. That's not my interest at the moment. But if this guy is being truthful and accurate, the lament perhaps that people have about Christian identification with politics, maybe there's more of that going on than you and I know about, and that some of it is actually accurate. There's some of their claims and descriptions of Christian nationalists is correct. And you and I go, why? What are you talking about? Because we don't think that way. But apparently, if this guy is accurate, there are a lot of people that do. So maybe if you engage with somebody who goes, oh, evangelical, you're a Christian nationalist, you can go, hold on. It's my understanding there are some people who claim the label of evangelical that act that way. I don't know who those people are, frankly, but it isn't. I think that might be helpful for us going forward. Maybe. I've been labeled a coward, sellout, a traitor to the Holy Spirit, cussed out at least 500 times. We've lost ministry partners about every hour and counting. Threats to his family, and he actually identifies specifically charismatic circles as being those folks that he was identifying as Christian nationalists. So maybe there is something to the secularist claim that some underneath the umbrella of evangelicalism are indeed acting that way. Do I know for sure? No, I don't. Because sadly, I don't know how much I would trust a fellow who tells me that I'm supposed to trust him when he claims that the Lord keeps talking to him when clearly he doesn't. And our final evangelical celebrity of the day would be perhaps the biggest herself, Beth Moore, leaving the Southern Baptist denomination, claiming this is not who I am. And I agree with that because I think we have some hints as to who she really is. Nevertheless, she said, I don't identify with some of the things in our heritage that haven't remained in the past. I think she's talking about sexism. I think she's talking about her understanding of racism. I think she's talking about the role of women in the church. She's also ended her publishing deal with Lifeway Christian, although they'll continue to sell her books. Moore has been vocal in her criticism of the Southern Baptist Convention's handling of critical race theory and racial issues in public posts on the Twitter machine. In 2019, she argued that while complementarian theology doesn't necessarily cause abuse in the church, nevertheless, she's going to blame it. Having too few women in power has directly contributed to sexual abuse. Wow. I'll bet she could find fellowship with people who think Pepe Le Pew is also responsible for the rape culture. That's quite a stretch. She also suggested the SBC has placed too many restrictions on women's roles in churches and that obsessing over the subject ultimately impedes the furtherance of the gospel. Well, isn't that convenient? She said that while she might join another denomination, she remains a Baptist in her heart. Well, I suspect that she does believe in paedo-baptism, but I'm just going to make... I'm going to don the mantle of Jeremiah Johnson just for a moment.
You're hearing it from God.
No, I couldn't even say it as a joke. Prediction. Don't be surprised when she finds herself preaching at a charismatic event. Just pondering. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.